If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Make this new school year an opportunity for your kids to learn important life skills with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely while parents keep an eye on kids' money habits. Greenlight also helps families get into their fall routine with a chores feature that lets parents assign chores and pay kids' allowance when they check them off. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod. Greenlight.com/pod.
The following is a Hoop Bowl presentation.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of Punt Intended, a fantasy NBA dynasty podcast. I'm your host, Rhett Bauer, joined as always by my co-host, the birthday boy, Travis Fuller.
Oh yeah, staying. I got my last year in my 20s, so looking forward to another good year and another good basketball season. Bulls look really sharp yesterday in their first preseason game, and that ticket I got for them winning the championship at 70-1 is looking pretty good right now.
Yeah, we're gonna overreact to some preseason basketball.
Absolutely, you know I'm going to.
Well, the Pacers lost by 30, and so it's probably time to blow it up. and that's our preseason overreaction for this episode. So a couple pieces of news that we have to get to. Kyrie's status is still up in the air, and the report from the team and from Shams was not encouraging. It was basically deciding whether or not they were going to accommodate him being a part-time player because he can't actually practice for the team. And for Dynasty, don't sell because you're going to get nothing. But if you're drafting, I mean, in redraft leagues, I've seen him go after the 60s. And I think that that's about right if he's not going to play half the games. But in dynasty drafts, I don't know how you value Kyrie.
Yeah, it's really tough. And we'll, you know, what did he go in our draft? I think he went in the third. Yep, third round. He went 33rd. Now, obviously, that's kind of before all this information came out even more so. Remember the same thing, Wiggins, we heard that from him and he ended up being okay for this year and moving forward. So Kyrie could also do the same thing, but it is extremely difficult to evaluate him right now in a startup, especially a player of his caliber who typically goes in a 12 team. He's going to go in that third round within that 25 to 35 range. So it's extremely tough to evaluate him. As Rhett said, if you own him, you just have to hold him right now and take your licks and see just see what happens. In a startup, though, I tend to stay away from him anyway, just because of the type of player he is and the stuff that he does. He's not dependable for me, and I don't like that. But man, he can be so good when he is healthy and playing.
And I'm sure some of you might be wondering, it's like, Rhett, that seems a little hypocritical. You were telling us to buy low on Wiggins and to draft Wiggins at value and go get him, like blah, blah, blah. Kyrie is just different. There is no telling what he's going to do. And he's also shown to be unpredictable. And for somebody who is going to be my second, third, fourth best player on my dynasty roster, I don't really know about that. If he's my fourth best, depending on how the rest of my draft went, like if I had Harden and then Dame, and then I took Vooch and then Kyrie was on the board at the turn, I would probably still take Kyrie because I can count on him being my fourth best player and hoping that he just ends up getting the vaccine or works something else out. So
yeah, I'm really somebody that really sticks to his convictions.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen that in the past where he really does stay true to who he is and what he believes. So that's the kind of part that has me a little uneasy.
Moving on, Trevor Ariza out 8 weeks with an ankle. He's getting reevaluated. Cue the Lakers old man retirement home jokes. This doesn't really do that much to me. I didn't see him that entire wing rotation with all of those players was going to be inconsistent as it was. This just makes it a little bit less crowded, but not enough to the point where it increases that much fantasy relevance. And if you were relying on Trevor Ariza, even in your 30 team leagues, then I guess this is bad news for you.
I don't know who's going to take that spot. They'll probably go with Carmelo, but regardless, I think the biggest winner is THT, Talen Horton Tucker, just because they can move LeBron to that power forward spot. And that can give some minutes to THT. He's probably the most dynasty relevant player as far as who this injury would affect. So hopefully he can get a little bit more minutes for you early on and increase his value.
A couple more pieces of news. One that just really hurts my heart. And that is Edmund Sumner was traded to the Brooklyn Nets and then cut from the Brooklyn Nets, but he's traded from the Pacers. And then some other people might be hurt because Sekou Doumbouya was also traded and cut. And that's two guys in deeper leagues that I know got drafted that people had hope for. I definitely had hope for Edmund Sumner, but that torn Achilles, and now he is probably definitely out of the league this year. We'll see for next year. Sekou is 3 years away from being 3 years away, it seems like. And it'll if the Houston Rockets don't have a spot on their roster to try and figure him out, it'll be tough to see another team making that move.
I remember drafting Sekou 2 years ago. I think I took him in the third round.
You did.
He was a guy like, man, Detroit has no wings. This guy could get some minutes right away. And boy, was I off on that.
He got minutes. He was just not good.
We'll hold out. Maybe he can make a comeback in the future. Maybe he needs to play overseas a little bit and come back. But who knows? He's a guy that you can – it's probably safe to say that you can cut him.
I'm leaving Edmund Sumner on my IR. Just pour one out for the guy because that's just a rough break. But we're here to finish up our mock draft conversation. We are going to do round 6 through 14 today. And then we'll talk about the results of the league and all of that stuff. But we're going to start round 6 with the pick that started round 6. And that was Draymond Green at 61 to Jackie Daytona. And that is early in a vacuum. But if you remember, this is the guy that took James Harden and Dame Lillard 12 and 13. And so then he took Vooch and Miles Turner at 36 and 37. So he's very much win now. And Draymond is a great player to be taking for a win now team. And he's definitely not going to be there. I shouldn't say definitely. It's very unlikely that he'll be there at 84, 85 when it's his next turn to pick. So sticking with your guns, digging into your build and taking a guy that will give you value along your core player's timeline. I don't hate it.
Yeah, definitely early, as you mentioned, but at the same time, when you've committed to already winning now, which he did as soon as he took Harden and Lillard there at 12 and 13, from there, you know, evaluations change drastically. And this is one of those cases where you're going to take a player like Draymond early when you don't think you're going to get him back because of what he can provide. And if you look at the way he built his team, taking Harden and Lillard, and then he went out and got Vooch and Turner for blocks, got a couple bigs there. So getting Draymond was really a slam dunk for that team to add to the steals and assists that he needed to kind of shore up there after taking two bigs.
Without a doubt. So then moving on to pick 66 was you, and a guy that I was talking to you about taking last pick at pick 55, who just slid all the way down the board to you, Mikal Bridges.
Yeah, this was a no-brainer. I didn't really want Bridges at this pick. I honestly didn't even think he'd be there.
Whining about getting forwards and you didn't want to take Mikal Bridges.
He wasn't even really on my radar. I was considering Caris LeVert, but at that time I was on my phone when I was making this pick and I thought LeVert was only guard eligible and not forward eligible. So I thought, you know what, Bridges, this is a good value pick. He's one of those players, and I mentioned this to you as soon as I took him and just kind of looked at his stats and just kind of looked at some of his tape. And he's a guy that just really grows on you. He's not flashy. He's not someone that you're going to be just in love with to have on your team. But when you do have him on your team, he's a hard guy to part with and just somebody that you know is going to help you every single night he's on the court.
No question. And that's kind of why I was telling you to pick him, is because he's just a solid player. He's not sexy, but that falls in line with the player that I took at pick 69, Rashawn Holmes, which I was considering taking Rashawn Holmes at 52, but I decided to go with Drew Holiday. So for him to be there 17 picks later, Rashawn at 69 is an extremely nice value. And I was very happy to get him and boost my blocks a little bit more, as I mentioned last episode, being a little bit behind on that for my build.
Yeah, excellent pick for your build. And we have him ranked 59th in our most up-to-date rankings, so great value as well. A couple picks to note in the sixth round, Kawhi Leonard went number 62. I know he's a player that's somewhat tough to evaluate right now in startups on where he should go. We have him kind of right around 60th in our rankings, so that was kind of spot on. But it is a great value pick if you're going, in this case, it was Matt Lawson. Shout out to him. It's a great pick, good value. I know Matt, he started his team off going really young, and then all of a sudden he said, Kawhi's there, I got to take him. It's a guy that he can stash away for this year, let him build his value back up and get some players back in return once he's healthy and put him on the trade market.
It was really funny because I mentioned last episode how Matt went just ultra young and then all of a sudden takes Kawhi Leonard with a degenerative knee issue and torn ACL right now at pick 62, but there's value in that. So it makes sense. Another pick that we liked was LeBron James going 71. I also was drafting on my phone and I was so keyed in on Rashawn that I just didn't take LeBron, even though I was winning now. And if I had to do it over again, I would probably take LeBron there instead. But LeBron going 71, he could have gone at 51. He could have gone 61, 71, and wouldn't have been surprised by any of it. So just a quick little note on him about the value that there can be had for a win down team at that point. Then we get a little bit funky. We've been talking about where some of these young players go, and there is not a better example of that than the seventh round in this dynasty mock draft, because Alperen Sengun went 73, Isaiah Stewart went 74, and Poku went 75. And I mean, those were guys that were picking in front of me, so I'm perfectly fine with it. I get them off the board and let me take somebody that I want. There was no chance I was going to take them at 76, but man, that's your seventh best player.
Yeah, the hype train was definitely rolling once we got into the seventh round. It was time in everybody's heads to start taking some chances on players. Giddy went 82 as well in that round. Pat Will at 83. So definitely a lot of young, high upside players being taken, which left some value for both you and myself, with you at 76, as you mentioned, taking Chris Paul and stopping the pick of youth.
Yeah, there was no chance I was going to take a young player at that point. And I said in the chat when I was making this pick, I was like, man, I don't like this because it's just early for Chris Paul. And no one cares about Chris Paul. I was the only one in this draft that was probably considering Chris Paul, except that Jackie Daytona was back there with two picks at 84, 85 and should have absolutely been taking Chris Paul had he been available. The other guy I was considering was Jared Allen, who was still on the board at 76, went two picks later at 78. But considering he just got absolutely baptized by John Collins, I don't want to just keep him on IR the entire season. He went up, contested the shot. He got DeAndre Hunter earlier in the game. Jared Allen is not afraid to go up and try to block a shot. But boy, did that. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Yeah, definitely go check that out if you haven't seen it yet. Pretty big time dunk there by John Collins. My pick, I was at 79. And as I mentioned previously, I was between Mikal Bridges and Caris LeVert at my previous pick. And it just so happened LeVert was still there for me at 79. So I had definitely snagged him here and put him in my forward spot, as Rhett reminded me that he is indeed a forward. So that was great value for me to get him there. That was probably, in my opinion, my favorite pick in this entire draft, was LeVert falling all the way back to me at my next pick at 79. I know he has a little bit of a health issue right now with his back, but I'm not too concerned with that. I think he's going to really play well for the Pacers this season.
No question. And it's funny because you were talking about taking a guy like Miles Bridges, who ended up going one pick after you because he was forward eligible. I was like, dog, I'm pretty sure Karras is forward eligible. And sure enough, he was. And so thankfully, you didn't have to wait another round before realizing your mistake, because he almost certainly would not have been there. In round 8, Mitchell Robinson going 87 was kind of a surprise. That's a little bit later than what I've seen him go in most of these mocks. Another guy that I was considering but didn't want to take just more of a block specialist than anything. I figured I could get some blocks later. I will tell you that I almost did not, because of some players that people in this mock knew that I liked and took way earlier than they should have. You know who you are, and we'll talk about you later. And then you took Marcus Smart at 90, which is another guy I could have penciled in at that exact spot the moment you took Trae Young early. Love it. But then Keldon Johnson went 91, and I'm not going to say it's the worst pick of the top 100, but I just don't trust his fantasy game.
Yeah, I really disliked that pick at the time. I know in these rounds, like 8, 9, 10, if you really like a young player, that you almost have to take them, because you just never know where they might go. It kind of gets to be a really random, especially for young players. You just never know who other guys might like a lot. So I understand the need to take them, but I agree with you. I actually like Devin Vassell more as a dynasty asset, both now and moving forward, more than Keldon Johnson, and that's reflected in our rankings. I know Keldon Johnson's going to get the minutes. They're going to be there. Pop really loves this kid, and he's shown some flashes, especially early last year. But his overall game and his skill set, I don't know how that's going to translate to fantasy numbers. And I know that's kind of always been the drawback from your perspective as well, Rhett.
Yeah, for sure. The interesting part is that the same manager who took Keldon Johnson at 91 took Sadiq Bey at 102. And had they flip-flopped those picks, it probably wouldn't have been as big of a deal to me, because I think Sadiq Bey is a better fantasy player than Keldon Johnson, has more opportunity than Keldon Johnson. And so that is just one of those things where if you flip the picks, it's not nearly as bad. And he got both guys, so it doesn't really matter. But it just seems like the opportunity cost of taking a guy like Keldon, who just isn't that fantasy friendly, despite having like 28 minutes a game of opportunity last year. Maybe he'll prove us wrong this year. But my pick in the 8th round, I did not like it. Remember earlier when I was talking about not having blocks, I took Jakob Poeltl. And it just, I don't like it. I just don't like it. I don't know if he's a long-term answer as a big for a team like San Antonio, but you know, it is what it is.
Those are the situations you do get into once you establish the punt that you are in. It's just, you get into that situation and in that spot where you look at all the players around there and it's just, nobody really fits. If I was in that spot, I would have taken Wiseman, but then you're a win now team. So that doesn't make any sense.
I had no room on my roster for Wiseman.
So yeah, it's just a really tough spot to be in where you're a win now. This is my build. There's a very small select group of players that you could have taken there.
And what's funny is I also found myself in a situation like the guy who took Keldon Johnson as Sadiq Bey, because my next pick was at 100 and Jonas Valanciunas was still on the board at pick 100. And if I flip-flop those, I probably feel a little bit better at taking Poeltl at 100 instead of 93. But, man, what is it with J-Val that had him drop like 40-something spots?
This entire mock draft, just I think it was just youth. I mean, we had, I don't know the exact number, but at least half the teams were going really young, more of a rebuild style in this mock, probably more than half, honestly. And that just caused some of these vets to drop. I mean, that same 9th round, DeMar DeRozan went 101, and he's a player that would typically go inside that top 100 in most 12-team mock startup dynasty drafts. So just a lot of vets that fell, and there was definitely some value to be had picking them up as you did in these later rounds.
So looking at the results from the draft, half the teams are 25 and younger for their average age, which is just, that seems about right. But it's also Matt Lawson's average age was 21.5. And that's and that's with Kawhi Leonard out there being 30 years old, 23.2, 24.1, 23, 25, 25. So, like, there's just a really a good mixture of win now and extreme rebuilding, but also just leaning on the younger side of things. Another pick in round 9 that was interesting was DeAnthony Melton going 97. And I like Melton. I went out and traded for Melton in a couple of my leagues over this summer. But that seems really aggressive for a guy that just has not been able to get a consistent role. And obviously, if we're going to overreact to some preseason, he did play really well in his only preseason game, I think, and it didn't even get to finish. So he played like 19 minutes, had 15 points, 5 assists, a steal, 3 threes, something like that. I don't know the exact box score, but regardless, so he had a good game, but that does not make me that encouraged for Melton at pick 97.
Our rankings, I feel like both of us are, you especially, are higher on Melton than pretty much anybody else. And we have him ranked at 112, and we're very high on him. So this was a little bit of an early pick. But again, we look at the spot that he picked him at, and it
on
was
the turn.
On the turn. So it's again one of those where you just really can't fault the guy for taking him there when you know he's not coming back to him. So I think that's the biggest takeaway from this is, yes, he went 97, but probably not coming back to him. And if that's your guy, you always got to go get him.
Especially on the tail end of that turn, because his next pick would have been 120, and it would have been surprising for Melton to be there at that point. So no shade on the DeAnthony Melton pick in round 9. You took Chris Boucher at 103, you and your Raptors power forward / centers as your only bigs on this entire team. Were you hoping for Sadiq Bey to be there? Did you have another guy in mind, or did you just like what Boucher brought?
So this whole entire draft, everything was falling in place for me. Every guy that I really wanted in my queue was there when I was up to pick, except for this round. This was the only round I got sniped, and that was Sadiq Bey going at 102. I had him at the top of my queue. I really wanted him. He's a great fit for my build, and he's still very young. And I like you mentioned earlier, I think he's just a really good player and somebody that can continue to get better. But unfortunately, he did not make it back to me. I was kind of at a loss on who to go with here. I liked Vassell a lot, but I wanted a player that could help me out a little bit more than what Vassell is going to be able to do this year and possibly next year. So Boucher was still there at 103. I think that's really good value. He was a top 40 player last year, and he only played 24 minutes a game. We know that Raptors front court isn't very strong. So even with his injury, I think he comes back and can maintain at least 24 minutes a game. And we know what he can do in that short amount of time. So getting a guy that's more than likely going to be inside the top 60 as far as this year and probably next year as well at the 103, I'm pretty comfortable with that and felt like it was just a good pick at the time, even though he's maybe not the best fit for my build.
Vassell went 106, and I mean, I don't hate it. It's a little bit earlier than we have him ranked, but again, with how youth heavy a lot of these picks were, it makes some sense. What does not make sense is that same manager, Will, you know what you did, and you took Nerlens Noel at 111. That's I could chalk Nerlens Noel onto my team. Like, I already had him in there. I had the starter spot open. I knew I was going to put him in there because I didn't think there was any way someone would take him before 117, which was my next pick. And Will did it. And after the draft, he's like, man, it doesn't seem like my team has a direction. Well, Will, that's why, because you took a pick just to spite me, and you know it.
Yeah, Nerlens, I mean, a lot of it is too, is just us knowing that Mitchell Robinson, we don't know how long, he's pretty much out indefinitely right now. So that could be in the back of a lot of people's minds as
he
well.
He has Mitch Robinson. He took him at 87. So he just handcuff.
He wanted the insurance. Yeah, absolutely.
No, it's
round funny. Round 10 was still good to you, though.
It was. So this was in the midst of all of the vaccination uncertainty with a guy, Andrew Wiggins. I got at 117. And Wiggins is a guy that I almost never draft because he's just a guy that just like, I just look over him and what he can do. But at 117, This man, like, he is a top 100 dynasty asset. He's 26 years old. He can score. He gets you a steal. He gets you a block. He gets you a handful of assists, boards. He's just good across the board. Free throw percentage is a little bit iffy, and field goal percentage may be a bit fluky. He might be back down to the 43-44% that his career has typically been at versus the 46-47 that he's shown in Golden State. But even still, I'll take Wiggins at 117 and be perfectly fine with it.
Yeah, great value there. Probably the best. Might have been your best pick in the draft as far as value goes.
J-Val at 100, we'll maybe, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, either one. My pick, not going to talk about too much. Devontae Graham, another guy in this build that you just pencil in and move on.
Absolutely, without question. Moving on to round 11, Buddy Hield went at 126, which is another guy who's about 40 spots back, 30, 40 spots, depending on how you want to look at it from where he is in our dynasty rankings. Sniped you a little bit. I took TJ McConnell at 124. I looked at Basketball Monster, the projections, and I knew I was behind in assists and steals. And I was hoping for Markelle Fultz at this point, because that's just my typical punt three free throw guard option in the 120s, but he did not make it to me. So I took TJ McConnell at 124. It is very early relative to where he will go in most mocks. But with the way my team was set up to contend in the next 3-4 years, I am perfectly content taking TJ McConnell anywhere from 120 to 150 if you really need those assists, steals, and decent field goal percentage.
Yeah, no doubt. A little bit of a reach, as you mentioned, but for your build and what you needed, he's not somebody you want to chance.
My next pick was 141 later as well. So, yep.
And I'm in the same boat in this round. I mean, I reached a decent amount to get the guy I wanted as well. And that's what you do in these later rounds, is you go out and get the guy you want. And for me, that was Matisse Thybulle. I didn't really need the steals at the time, but he's somebody I just really like his game. And again, he's not a sexy player, but he's one of those guys when you have him on your team, you know the value he can bring to your team on a nightly basis. And he's somebody that is really hard to get, in my opinion. I've tried to get him now in both our leagues, and he's just really tough to trade for, because you don't want to give up a lot of value for him, but the owners typically do want a lot of value for him, because again, they know exactly what he's going to bring to the table in limited minutes.
He's such an interesting player because he has such a incredible fantasy floor with the steals and the blocks, and he offers absolutely nothing else right now. But if he ever figures all of that out, then what the heck are we doing with him outside the top 100? Moving on to round 12, it got a little bit funky. And I mean, you took Herter at 138, which was a pretty good pick. I think that's later than what we have him in our dynasty rankings. No problem there. Isaiah Roby went 139, which you guys should know by now how we feel about Oklahoma City Thunder players that are easily replaceable. That is Isaiah Roby. And then I took John Wall at 141, which again was just to supplement those assists and steals and a little bit of points. My field goal percentage was untouched and nobody was going to touch me in field goal percentage. So I had no problem taking a guy like John Wall at 141 with the hope that he ends up getting traded and or bought out sometime this year.
Yeah, a good mix of old and young in this round. TJ Warren, a notable player, went 137 in this round. So if you're looking at TJ Warren, that was where we had him somewhat evaluated as far as this mock draft goes. A lot of that probably having to do with his most recent injury news, stating that he is out indefinitely as he recovers from his injury. But then we also had a couple rookies here go late. Davion Mitchell, Chris Duarte, two rookies that I am very high on, both of them, and guys that you can typically get later in your rookie drafts. And I love both those guys quite a bit this year.
142 and 143 for both of those guys is a little bit early, but you have to factor in that this was a 12-team mock that went to 14 rounds. It wasn't as deep as you would typically go for a dynasty draft. So from here on out, it was guys just those young teams just grabbing guys that they wanted to have on their roster to just say that they drafted them for kicks and giggles, more or less. So round 13, Klay Thompson went at 145. It's a little bit notable there. Andre Drummond went 146. And then Xavier Tillman went 147. I did not like this pick very much. Like I said, it's tough to beat up on guys for taking players in the last two rounds of a 12 team because you're just drafting guys to have them rostered. But this is easily 40 spots too early for Tillman.
Yeah, definitely too early for Tillman. If you are in a startup draft, he should not be going inside the top 160, 170, in my opinion. You could make an argument that he probably shouldn't have been drafted in a 14-round mock draft even. So another player I didn't like in this exact round, and it's on the opposite end of the age spectrum, and that's Al Horford going at 153.
I took Larry Nance at pick 148, which is probably a little bit earlier than he'll go most places, unless you get a contending team like I was. I was very happy to have some more just low-level assists, a steals, good field goal percentage, and a guy who the Trailblazers traded for. They're going to play him. They're doing what they can to try and keep Dame happy. You took Gary Trent at 151, which I thought was a great pick. Kind of guy that slid under the radar through this mock and should have plenty of opportunity up in Toronto.
Yeah, why not? Why not complete my Toronto Raptor starting lineup?
He's not big enough, so he's already been dropped. But.
But yeah, he's just at 151. Not bad. I like what he brings. And I was just trying to, at this point, trying to solidify my threes, my free throw percentage. And he was the best at doing both of those at the time and his age. I liked a lot there being under 25. So I don't love having all those Toronto players. Probably something I would not have done. And if I could do over, I wouldn't take four Toronto Raptors on my team. But for the mock, I was just trying to pick guys that I would normally take in that situation.
Exactly. Matt Lawson taking Moses Moody at 155. He's just doing what he does. And then he had another really good value pick, I think, and I'm sure you're going to agree, Coby White at 158. He's a guy that it's been really, really tough to know where to put him because all of the Bulls' moves were pretty much in the backcourt. Like DeMar DeRozan is a wing. He's a forward, whatever you want to say. He handles the ball a lot. Lonzo Ball. Alex Caruso, you know, like just a lot of mouths to feed, a lot of ball handling, not to mention Coby White's injury to start the season. So 158, that's just more of a notable thing to talk about rather than some indication of him being earlier or later than that for most drafts.
Yeah, it just kind of shows you how everything has cultivated for him and his value in dropping that low. I love the pick there. I don't think you can go wrong in taking a guy like Coby White in the 150s.
Nope.
For what he can bring, he's going to come off the bench, but he doesn't need a ton of minutes. If he can run that second unit off the bench, that's probably actually better for him to be able to kind of keep those assists up. He's really good from the free throw line. He's going to make threes. He's going to score the basketball. We'll see how he develops on the defensive end. Who knows there, but yeah, you can't beat that value this late. And somebody that, like as you mentioned, everything is just a negative for him this offseason. There's really no positives coming out of Coby White camp this offseason. So don't let him drop too far. I know everything's not looking the brightest for him, but he's still only 21. And that's the thing you do have to keep in mind.
You took Kelly Oubre at 162. I took Eric Bledsoe at 165. Both reasonable picks. And that closes out the mock draft. So looking at the projected standings, I think I've mentioned it before, but I am projected to beat just about everybody 5-4 or 6-3, except you. I will lose steals to you. I am the only team that is shooting over 50% from the field, and I'm shooting 54% from the field, but I'm also shooting under 75% from the line. So that's just kind of how my team builds tend to go.
Exactly what you want. I mean, you want to see that you are, when you're punting, I mean, you're not messing around with that. You want to make sure that you're getting those stats that you need. And that just kind of shows even more so how hard you went after the punt in this mock.
I punt more aggressively than just about anybody who will talk fantasy. And especially when it's threes and free throws, I just do it so often that it's just like, I can't not just go as hard as I can into rebounds, assists, steals, blocks, field goal percentage, and subsequently turnovers against the good teams like yours, who just are all guards. But in totals, I am not projected to do very well because I have the second lowest games played of everybody projected. And that comes from guys like Jimmy Butler, Drew Holiday, Chris Paul, you know, just old guys that John Wall obviously just isn't going to play. So it's just tough to take into consideration that I'm probably going to be somewhere in the middle, able to just bludgeon people 5'4", because that's how my build is. I'll probably take a couple L's in the season, just getting caught on a bad field goal week or something like that. But I don't know. I'm pretty happy with the way my team turned out with the mock draft, especially when I knew what I was going to do as soon as I took Giannis.
Yeah, not at all. I mean, you do what you do with your build. I'm actually extremely happy. I absolutely loved the way my team turned out. And that's, like I mentioned, I really only got sniped hard the one time. And other than that, everybody I wanted fell to me in this build, you know, starting with Trae Young falling to me at 7, I guess if you could say fell to me at 7. But grabbing Fox, FVV, Lonzo, perfect punt field goal, punt block build to start. And then getting those notable players we mentioned, like a LeVert, Marcus Smart, Devontae Graham, guys that have huge value when you remove the field goal percentage and the blocks from their stat lines. They really go up in value quite a bit. So overall, very happy with everybody I picked. Like, just like you, it's a very hard punt, pretty much going after those five categories and not much room for error whatsoever. But that's just the way I like to do it. I think that is the way to go in these smaller 12-team leagues is you're not going to finish in first place probably, but once you get in the playoffs, you're a scary team to have to face.
You did end up beating two teams in blocks and per game. Boucher alone.
Boucher. He'd be traded, though. You know he'd be traded the first 2 weeks of the season.
He would.
As soon as he gets healthy, he's gone.
One good game and he'd be out of there. So you would end up losing to three teams in a head-to-head matchup, but you are 2 years younger than all of those teams. So you kind of have a little bit of optimism there because obviously you're going to lose to the team that has Harden, Dame, Vooch. Mm-hmm. Like that's, you're just accept that. That's just what it is. But he's also 29 years old for his average age. So you are 3.5 years younger than his team. So, you know, that's one of those things when you're looking at these projections, if you are keeping track of them very closely through the draft, just don't get ahead of yourself and start cranking your age up to try and match those per game stats if you have an advantage in the upside side of things.
Yep, exactly. You always have to take that into account. Even though you feel really good about your team, there's always going to be teams that go out there, take the veterans, take the value that the veterans bring at their draft positions. And they're going to dominate within, you know, the first 2 to 3 seasons. So, you know, don't let that sway you. I know it's really hard to get in that mindset to look 3 to 5 years down the line. It's really difficult for us to do because we want to live in the moment. So just try to keep that in mind. I always like to have a 3 to 5 year outlook depending upon what my team looks like at the end of these startup draft or a mock draft.
Without a doubt. And so that is the end of our mock draft episode. We may do one more at some point this year, depending on how the season goes. Maybe we throw a bigger league out there. Who knows? If you guys have the interest in that, let us know on Twitter at @Rhett_Bauer and at @Travis_Fuller92. Follow the podcast at @PuntIntendedPod. We would love to hear from you. And if there's enough interest, like I said, we will absolutely just start another one of these up and get it done before the season starts. The article for this to see exactly where everybody went with little blurbs about each round will be up on hoop-ball.com at some point here in the next week or so. Be on the lookout for that. Check out our dynasty rankings to be able to refer where people went in the draft versus where we have them ranked. Sort of a good little indicator for what to expect moving forward. And of course, thank you very much for tuning in. We will see you again next time.
This has been a Hoop Ball presentation.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over 1 million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery. so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.